Welcome to the War Report on Public Education. The future of education is an important concern for our time. Where it's heading, how it's evolving, and the influence corporate America has on its outcome. The War Report on Public Education provides critical news, analysis, and perspectives on the what, why, who, where, when, and how of both the new corporate state elites campaign, the Machiavellian agenda to destroy the nation's public education system, and the rising public resistance movement to defend and defeat this Machiavellian agenda. And now, here is our host, Dr. James Abington Miller, Jr.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to this edition of the War Report. As you know, I'm on the road again, and I'm in the state of New York. I came into Long Island Monday night around about 11 p.m., this morning, after about what I've been here about 5-6 days now, this morning we got up and we drove up to Albany, the capital of New York, for some legislative activity tomorrow that I'll tell you a little bit more about later in the show. We have back with us again Dr. Gary Nimi. He was on last week. He just couldn't get enough of the War Report. He begged me to have him back on as soon as I possibly could, preferably this week. I mean, he was even offering me bribes or some kind of stuff, so I relented, and now we have him back. Welcome back, Gary.
Hillary Clinton can resist the bribes. I don't know why you can't, James. What's the matter with you? And I didn't bribe people.
So. I have integrity. I have integrity. I don't think I need to say any more to that. Welcome back, Gary. I told you last week at the end of the show that we would get back together as soon as we could to talk about the social, the political, the economic, the psychological, emotional impact of being bullied, and particularly we're talking about teachers being bullied in the workplace, a subject that's not covered hardly at all in the media, of course, and something that you have extensive background in doing research and helping people dealing with their emotional experiences relating to workplace bullying. And so I thought that this would be the best time to revisit that subject and have just you and I, and of course anyone who wants to call in, deal with it. So with that, you mentioned last week three studies that you've been involved in, and we didn't have time to go into. So at some point, I want to get into those and all the research that you've been doing. I mean, you're the person here in this whole area. So let's start with, I'm going to say, my road trip, I reveal that so many teachers, one, we're operating under the fear factor. I knew that before I went out. But what I wasn't quite sure of, and then was, I won't even say, I can't be amazed at it, was that the number of teachers who don't recognize the social and the psychological, emotional impact that they are suffering from day-to-day bullying, or the fear that they may be the next one to be bullied. So you have the experience. When do people come to realize that they are being bullied and that it's impacting them emotionally?
Well, you beg the question, can you be bullied without even knowing it? And you already answered it. Yes, you can. In fact, it takes people with different values and different constitutions and different life experiences, sometime. For some people, it could take months to catch on to the fact that they are under psychological assault. As remarkable as that sounds, as unbelievable as it sounds, it's absolutely true. And it doesn't make the person weak or somehow faulty by any means, but people do take a long time to realize that it is not, they are not the problem, that the problem lies outside, external to them, that there is an abuser in their life, and this has absolutely nothing to do with work. And part of the reason that takes so long is a social reason, that we have been basically groomed to keep our nose down, don't stick out like a sore thumb. Look how we socialize people at work, to basically tell them to grovel, to basically be acquiescent. And when that is an important value to you, survival, not getting noticed so you don't get hurt and all the rest, when someone comes along to hurt you, you just simply accept it as routine, a routine aspect of work, which, of course, it shouldn't be. But all of that gobbledygook that I think that baggage of you have to wait. If you want to have integrity, if you want to be able to do what you want to do, you have to wait until you're a boss. And then it's all tied in with bossness and command and control and all that other nonsense. So I say all that to say, targets, the salt of the earth, targets of bullying, greatest people on earth, they're wonderful. Their profile is as follows. They are independent. They refuse. They don't actually understand that they're being forced into subservience, but if it were done directly, they would refuse to be subservient and push back. They are technically more skilled, so they pose a threat to their bully, to their perpetrator. They are emotionally balanced in the sense that they are the ones that actually have empathy for their aggressor, which is weird and a misplaced, level of energy. But their kindness allows them to have empathy. But they have social skills. They are well-liked. Emotional intelligence, too, if you will. They are not game players, which means they are apolitical, which means they're actually good, quote, team players, which I hate the phrase, but, you know, the whole idea, they love cooperative tasks and all the rest. But they are not political, and that is to their own detriment. Now, there's the profile. A self-starting, technically skilled, short learning curve, emotionally intelligent team player, and those are the people that run into bullying. That's exactly the portrait that makes it happen. So because of their goodness and their niceness and their kindness, that's how they miss seeing the cruelty that's foisted on them. So when we start talking about harm, James, I want to hear what you have to say. But I want to break that in. I'll get suddenly linear about harm because it helps people understand it better. But in response to your idea there that you just laid out, people can have this happen to them and not have a clue. It takes someone else to tell them, hey, you don't need to take that crap. Where is that written into the job description? Why, for exchange for a crappy paycheck, do you think you got to tolerate and take all that nonsense? That is abuse, man. That is bullying. But it's usually someone else who tells them. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, you and I both know that I like you in social psychology. I spent some time in clinical psych, and I don't really want to say something definitive. Going out on my trip, I knew about the fear factor. I'd seen it, I heard it, I knew about it and how it operates for decades. But I was really kind of, I guess, surprised that the teachers, and particularly the older teachers that I interviewed, it was pretty much like you just described. They were reluctant in the beginning to see the other person as a bully, as a evil doing person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was like my image of my teachers growing up, they were the great people. Most of my teachers, like everyone else, were women teachers. And they were kind, they were caring, and boom, you get this bully, and they don't look at him and say, no, you son of a bitch. you know, who in the club do you think you're messing with, sort of thing. And it takes some time for them to realize or come to accept, I'm being messed with at a level that I shouldn't be, no one should be, and I'm the target for whatever reason. But then many of them, and when I say many, I only interview like 50, almost 60 people, but I've had many call on the show, I had many write me, you know, messages and et cetera, and some of the things that I'm describing are the general things that I've noticed here. And it really takes something to really bad to happen for many of them to finally accept they have been being bullied for a while, that is more personal now than professional, and that they are targeted for whatever reason. And to me, that's the point. They are targeted, and it takes some time to see that. But once they drop, they being the bullies, drop the hammer on them, and or take them out of the classroom, take them out of the school, put them in the rubber room, it starts to dawn on them. And even then, you mess with me, I mess with you kind of person. So I guess to some extent
you're not
what
target
I'm saying
material.
Is...
but you are not target material. That's right. That's right.
And,
but there are those among us, a good quarter of the population, 27%, and we have to help them. You know what? Because they cannot defend themselves, they have taken so long, as you describe it, that recognition that here's the real danger is that their values have been shaken to the very foundation. Everything they have grown up as they were parented, their beliefs, their sense of the world, whether it's fair, unfair, benevolent, or cruel, has all been ripped to shreds and turned upside down, and it's jaw-dropping. So in a way, it's almost partly defensive. It's like it's the way the mind works with sexual assault, the way dissociation works to protect you. The mind will say, you are going through such a horrific situation, I'm going to go park you now up on the ceiling. Let's have an out-of-body thing, and I'm going to take you away for now, totally to protect you. And, of course, this happens naturally. That's how dissociation works. And a lot of the people that are traumatized, I'll tell you that 30% are, get PTSD diagnosis, for crying out loud. Well, they are so traumatized that they've lost their connection to that reality in the beginning. So that I think that also makes it harder and harder to recognize. But what I wanted to back up, what you just said, was maybe you don't want to go to quick recognition when the story is so dark and so evil that these kinds of creepy people not only exist, holy crap, they're in my own school building, and they're doing this in front of my students in a career and a job that I love. I chose this. I love my kids, and this is what's going on. That is so surreal. It is so upside, so unrelated to the work itself. I think that psychological shock. There's a wonderful traumatologist, and her name is Ronnie Janoff Bullman. Now, she's no kid. She's been around a long while, and we love her book. It's called Shattered Assumptions, and you'll like this too, James. The assumption is the worldview, and she tried to predict who among everybody who's subjected to abuse suffers PTSD, because not everyone does. I mean, we all have different coping strategies, different filters, individual differences in general of the way we would react to these, you know, strong adverse things. Guess what the number one and number two predictors are? She developed a scale, and she's done it, and it's got all the reliability and validity over the years. And she honed her skill with domestic violence victims, trying to predict who among the abused spouses would get PTSD. And it's the ones who have a, quote, benevolent belief in a benevolent world, It's fair and equitable. If I work really, really hard, if I do put in a lot of input, a lot of effort, I will reap the rewards because that's how the fair world works. Woo! Not in any kind of political organization, it doesn't. But you see, there, that's one set. And the other set of assumptions is all about the people themselves, that people are kind, generous. And when you run into I love your opening about Machiavellianism. It's one of my favorite things to talk about. But it's more than that. There are some researchers up at University of British Columbia that have written for years and years about the dark triad of personality traits: narcissistic, antisocial, Machiavellian. And that package they've called the dark triad. And they have since gone on in just the last couple of years and looked at society and said, we have to add everyday sadism. There are too many people who are deriving way too much pleasure from harming other people. And so that's your package of who these perps are. And so now I bring it back to the idea of a well-intentioned, wonderful, albeit naive, political person believing that the workplace might be fair and also believing that people are benevolent. And then they run into these creeps who are either personality flawed or they're just like themselves, but they want the reward. The darn organizations are rewarding. Every American workplace is so stinking zero-sum oriented that they're rewarding implicitly all this negative crap. Anyway, that's what I have to say. But I love what Ronnie General Fullman has always written about, and that's who teachers are. Teachers believe in a benevolent world because they have so much optimism. They stay longer than they should because they have that optimism is what allows them to work, at least in the K-12 world. But I taught college like you, and I had the same feeling when I was teaching college. You see hope and potential in everybody. And if that person, that child or that young adult doesn't see it in themselves, you work doubly hard to make sure that they do see it, and you give them their hope in themselves. So anyway, if that's your orientation in life, you've got your back turned to the backstabbers. You're so easily exploited. That's why teachers are so ripe. This is so ripe in the teaching profession, is what I'm saying. It's crazy.
You know, you just backed up something that I think it's been a little over a year ago. Matter of fact, it's been almost like a year and a half ago. I made a couple of statements. One, that the War Report, that's the title of our show, The War Report, and I'm reporting on the war. And it's a class war, it's a race war, but then I said, it's a gender war.
Yeah.
And the person I talked to was a woman, and I said, it's a gender war. There are, at that time, I think maybe it's 5-6 million teachers. 75%, closer to 80% are female, and most of those are middle class, white, female. And I was saying to this person, that's who's being warred upon. Sure, the war starts in the black brown communities where you find a lot of black brown teachers now. Also, when you brought in the Common Core and the standardized testing and you moved it to the suburbs, you move it to statewide, you're hitting at women. And I go further to say that I believe, in terms of the Machiavellian agenda, and those people who've been with me from the beginning, they know what I mean when I talk about the Machiavellian agenda being part of what I'm called the neoliberalism that dominates political economy, ideology that dominates the world now for the last 30, 35 years, that the people who formulated the agenda, the ideology, they knew damn well that by taking on public education, they're taking on women. And I believe that was a key part of their strategy, and I think he even said it last week or before last, because to today's women, unlike the women of the 60s, where you had massive, massive numbers of women all across the country, all across the world, joining and forming their own movement for liberation, that you don't have that today. I guess the closest thing was the Occupy movement that came and left, came in on a Monday, left on a Sunday. So
yeah.
In formulating this war, they did not anticipate any major resistance. And I think they also believed that they could go in, like sending the principals in, sending the superintendents in, sending all the people they sent into the public school systems with the authoritarian attitude, with the, what was someone said on the show last week, a new principal came into the school. It was from the, New York, Bloomberg Academy, Bloomberg Academy, and comes in as a new principal, and his first staff meeting, he says, 30% of you won't be here next year.
Yep, very,
right
very
off the
much
bat.
Corporate. The corporate
yeah,
Jack
right
Welch agenda, exactly.
Right up, telling you, I'm going to bully you, I'm going to get you out, I'm going to do all the things that I can do, legal, illegal, to get you, 30% of you out in my first year. I mean, that's classic bullying, but I bet you at that school, most of the teachers were women.
I got to agree with you about the, I think the idea was tied in with the anti-unionism that we talked about last week. But I do agree with the vast majority being women. They saw an easier mark. But it also fits the attack on women, period. I mean, reproductive rights, and it's like, we've got to get our women barefoot and pregnant again. I don't know what in the world. I'm so old. I like you remember the when women were united in power, but they're listen. I was teaching just a couple years ago. I was on the city bus going up to the campus, and I heard this young gal telling her her friend. These are two undergraduate age kids, young people. Well, he beats me, to these old ears, I just said, I went over and I said, I apologize. I don't mean to be cranky, but I got to tell you, you should never have that outlook because there are so many options. Please call the domestic violence shelter. And here's the number and all that. And I felt like, oh, well, there I was, just an old nudge and getting involved in something I shouldn't have. But that taught me and reminded me that each generation needs to relearn all of these lessons. Why do we have to continue to go back to the beginning, though? That's beyond our discussion today, but for another time. But it's so easy to tear a movement down, so easy to replace it, and so hard to get it remounted, as is true with most liberal causes, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Let's move to your work. You've been at this for, 19 years, I think you said?
Yeah, it's coming up in June on 19, yeah.
And mostly with teachers and nurses.
Everybody, but that's who sought help the most, I will say. Because women's targets are curious, and they do want to get it alleviated. Men are going to just play stoic almost stereotypically, men try and ignore it more. But they are equally hurt. So let me break the harm down for you this way, James. We're going to start with health harm. And within health, we're going to split it artificially, this is artificial division, into stress-related physical complications and then psychological, emotional. Then we'll talk about the loss of social support, which is a different kind of harm where you're stripped of your affiliations with peers, which is a big deal because we're social animals. And the third is the economic harm. So starting with this, does that sound good?
Yes.
Okay. So let's start with the stress-related because I get very excited about this only because the newest science is coming out in this, because they found, the scientists have found a new toy. And the new toy is the functional MRI. Those of you and those of us who have had bad backs and reasons to get an MRI test in that clunky magnetic resonance imaging unit, very noisy and all the rest. What that MRI does is it traces the flow of oxygen in the brain. When they do a scan, an MRI of the brain, certain areas light up. That's where the oxygen's going. That's where the blood's going. That's the activated area. So they can give the brain exercises and see which areas are now involved in a much more pinpointed way than they ever used to. When I started teaching, we were very, very equivocating about, well, this region of the brain is responsible for a ton of things, but we really can't be sure. They are gaining a new certainty that I've never seen before. So they're very, very confident. So neuroscience, if we were training as social psychologists today in grad school, half of our time would be in neuroscience. We'd be learning the coordinates and the way to do all these mathematical summation things for firing a neuron, as well as the broader social stuff that we always took delight in knowing about. So long story short, let me tell you about the stress-related physical. I always dispense the notion, there's always a clown that'll come along in a large audience that says, but stress is good. I mean, they'll write a book about stress is good. It usually comes from a business-oriented area. It's the corporation's way to tell you, eat crap and die. I mean, we're dishing out the distress, and you're going to live with it and shut the hell up. That's what, to me, always stress management was. I always thought they were BS exercises in altering perceptions, altering your idea of what reality is while denying that you're in a horrific situation. Stress management's not going to ever, anyway, but I digress. Eustress is positive stress. The thrill of going upside down in a roller coaster or an aircraft, one of those barnstorming double-wing things at a county fair. Okay, but people want to do that. They want to parachute. They want to fly. They want to do all that stuff. Fine. Distress never has a positive aspect to it. It has no positive goal. Distress is only destructive. So it's distress that we're talking about. Distress is the activation of the human stress response. Old school called it fight, flight, or fight. The activation of the endocrine system, and it had all this impact on your organs and shut down some organs and made more organs very acute. Your vision would be very acute because you're running from the saber-toothed tiger. Our bodies still are evolutionarily stuck in that kind of a response, and it's very coordinated. Our bodies are smart. You can't convince your body that it's not stressed and distressed when it is. Some people think you can gain complete cognitive control. No, not complete. You can fool it later, and you can recreate the distress, but in the initial going, when the bully comes at you for the very first time, that distress is immediate. And it's gut-churning, and your body is already in the alarm phase, and it's trying to figure out what to do. Here's the harm that comes from that. We know cardiovascular harm, without a doubt. We've known that forever. The gateway to cardiovascular disease is high blood pressure. It is the first thing that happens to a person. Your blood pressure will shoot up when you are bullied. The trouble with blood pressure is it doesn't carry physical symptoms. So unless you happen to have a blood pressure cuff on, or you go get one on soon thereafter, which no one's going to do, it'll subside and you'll never know. See, that is the problem. You don't find out about high blood pressure till you're at the doc over something else for another reason, and they say, why is your pressure 170 over 120? And you said, I don't know. And they will inevitably say, what is stressful in your life? And you must get it turned off or it will kill you. And they, as if you could just leave. Anyway, so cardiovascular, all the way up through strokes, heart attacks, cardiac arrest. The cardiovascular system is extremely sensitive. gastrointestinal system, very sensitive to stress, irritable bowel disorder. If you've got that or colitis, you are stressed. That's all. It's a backwards diagnosis. If you have IBD or colitis, you are experiencing debilitating distress in your life. Get it fixed. Pay attention to what your body's telling you. You know, when you were saying early, James, that people don't recognize they're being bullied, they don't connect the dots between what their physical symptoms are telling them and their experience at work. You were going to say something.
Yes, two things. We got a caller on, but before we go to her, what I also was telling people, how this being bullying at work, you bring that home, how it could affect social relationships, be it your husband, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your relatives, your friends, and
it
can affect you in so many ways that you just don't perceive. I mean, I guess I'm stumbling here because you and I see it because, you know, that's what we trained for years and years ago in clinical psych and social psych, and et cetera. But it's just amazing. And then they think it's something else. And they'll go to the doctor and they'll describe it as something else, and then they'll get anti-anxiety medication. They'll get some now getting diabetic medication, et cetera. And
yes.
I'm getting too emotionally involved here because I know how important this stress is on the
body. Well, calm down yourself. Let me finish this.
And the mind. Yes, I'll have a stress attack. Let me bring in our caller. Are you there, caller?
Hello? This is Dr. Windham, Dr. Miller. Hello.
Who is it again?
It's Rose.
Oh, hi, Rose. How are you?
Hi there.
Okay.
Very observant of the quality of life that's been compromised with the stress that's been imposed upon us.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to give an overview of how my teachers are responding to the stress that we have imposed upon us as a result of the hyper-focus on standardized assessments and teacher evaluations that are coupled with it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that useful?
Yeah.
Sure. Go ahead.
Sure. So I'm finding a greater number of teachers being medicated in order to go to work. They have found that they don't have many choices in planning to leave because they've invested so much time and so much resource in getting their degree and their certification. There's a disintegration of the camaraderie ship that had once been vibrant when we were all learners and teachers, you know. There is a sense of failure when they feel sick. They think it's their personal issue. And my response to them would be that it's just their body saying this isn't right. And that, in fact, they're actually more sane than the people who keep perpetuating the stress.
Perfect, Rose. That's actually right.
Yeah.
I think the key thing Rose is doing there is externalizing this. Targets, mm-hmm. by their nature, will blame themselves. And any outsider would say, any rational outsider says, are you kidding? You did nothing. You didn't ask for this. What'd you do?
Mm-hmm.
Be the best teacher. Hold
right.
an apple. So what you're doing is actually a great health promotion strategy, too. Plus, it is just calling the liars the liars. And let's just get it straight. Somebody who calls you incompetent is lying, and that needs to be labeled as such. And you should never, as the bullied teacher, the target, adopt it, internalize it. Go ahead.
Very much so, yes. Especially since we know what it takes to get certified and maintain our certification, especially in Connecticut, it's no joke, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, I learned a little bit on NPR about how when we're under stress, we fall into the hierarchical thinking,
mm-hmm.
where we just do as we're told.
Yeah.
And being thinking people, after we do what we're told and realize that it was wrong, we get sick.
if you're a responsible person. Notice the perps, the yes. bullies. The a-holes are never responsible. They will never accept it.
No.
They'll preach
Gary, I got a big old smile here. You said a-hole.
Yeah.
Last week you wouldn't say that last week. Okay, you're getting more comfortable. Rose.
Okay, so I would like to hear the rest of the show.
Yeah.
But thank you, Rose. By the way, are you part of the Connecticut CTEA?
I am AFT.
Oh, you're AFT.
But more
okay.
importantly, I'm a bat.
Yeah.
Do you know what a bat
badass
is,
sir? Teachers. Yeah, badass teachers, yeah.
Yes, sir. That's way more important. Although, I'm not going to discredit my union.
I've got somebody from Connecticut Teachers Union coming to our Workplace Bullying University next month. He just called this week. So
that is exciting.
That's training. A lot of union people come to that. So I hope that, you know, man, you need to talk to your union about sending you. But anyway, thanks for calling.
I will do.
Thank you, Rose.
Let me go on. Okay.
Sure.
So you got your immunological system compromised. Here's the link to cancer that the stress researchers cannot make yet because it's direct. We're always looking for a direct link, but this it has to be a circuitous route through something called these T cells and all the rest. But I can tell you that all of my politically active state coordinators, the people in New York included, and that I have a major cancer cluster of these among this group of former bully targets. So you can't tell me that this major distress, this long-term exposure, has not increased the likelihood of cancer. But the scientists are, you know, quiet on that. They're being cautious. But I don't think that's the point. Now, remember I mentioned MRI? Here's what's scary. The newest sciences are showing that when the stress hormone cortisol, the one that gives you belly fat, the one that is considered the stress hormone, when it floods the brain during the human stress response, during distress, guess what it does? It'll shrink particular regions of the brain that are concerned with emotional regulation and memory. So it goes right after the amygdala and the hippocampus. And when you reduce volume in an area of the brain, what it does is change the person's outward demonstrable behavior such that they look impaired. So if you were once steady as a rock, after 6 months of being under a bully's thumb with weekly exposure and inescapable exposure, like Rose said, where are you going to go? You're in a district. If you hop schools, you're still in the same district. You've invested all this time in this career, the certification, where are you going to go? Plus, you're living somewhere, and it's hard to just up and move. So long story short, as long as that exposure continues, you're going to become more of an emotional wreck. You will be dysregulated. You won't be able to keep your cool. You won't be able to be a rational thinker. Then, if I've come in and I've called you, James, on the first day that I became your supervisor, I called you stupid and incompetent, but you, of course, I asked right away, who's the best? So I'm going to go make an example of you because the staff told me you were the best. So I'm going after you, you see. That's my challenge. That's my perverted view of the world as a bully. I'm going to take you down and make an example of you so I can control everybody. And so I call you incompetent, and I pound you, and I pound you, and I pound you. You blame yourself, just as Rose said her members do. They blame themselves because they do. It's just the nature of targethood. I wish we could get out of that, but, you know, we can't. And then what happens is now we know from the MRI studies the hippocampus has shrunk to the fact that to the level that the person can no longer retrieve long-term memories. And how do we appear stupid to the outside world? We lose our memory. When we don't have our memory, we don't have our intelligence. We don't have our intelligence, they put us on a PIP, or they start videotaping. Here's the thing that I hate so much about K-12 teachers is the superintendents bring in the video crew and they start filming the damn teachers. So they make them so super anxious, even though they already were great. Anyway, and what happens is we are changing, that's not we, the bully is changing their brain. Now, is that an assault or what? This is a new neuroscience, mm-hmm. and the atrophies mm-hmm. in all these related areas. There's even a disconnect, and if you've been long-term depressed, you feel guilt, experience it differently, and the MRI shows how a formerly depressed person versus a non-depressant. This is unthinking believable. Now, it would be great, although unethical, to go and do a pre-hire brain scan and then say, if you were to injure me in the course of my employment and that MRI shows that reduction in volume in these key areas, I'm suing your ass. It would be great. That's all I'm saying. Finally,
oh, God, you even got ass in. That's, I'm loving you, guy. Come on.
Now, let me finish.
Hold on for your final thought. Roll something you said earlier. I've talked about do no harm. Oh, about a year or so, a little over a year or so ago, with a show with Peggy Robinson and Sylvester Smith and a teacher from Florida. And when that teacher refused to give tests to kindergartners, and everyone was talking about being a conscientious objector. And I said, to me, it's the first law of the Hippocratic Oath. First, do no harm. So when you have a teacher who is forced to do things that he or she believes professionally and personally are harmful to the students.
Yes.
But they themselves have to do it in order to keep their jobs, et cetera. Tell me that can't be nothing but a shitload of stress being created, manufactured, and dumped on teachers across the country.
Absolutely.
Yes, when I was out on a couple of panels, yes, I would include a copy of the Code of Professionalism from Connecticut, and then I would say every day when I go to work, I break 4 of these 7 expectations, and then I get evaluated.
Excellent. What a joke. The fact that they're even trying to tie another person's performance to your evaluation, I mean, that is one of the dirtiest secrets we all know from learning theory, that they're totally disconnected. What happens to the children is out of your, this is horrible. I know. Basically, they're asking you to be unethical, not asking you're forced.
Pretty much, yeah. Yes, compelling you.
Okay.
Which is why I just shout out to the Chicago teachers who are now out on the streets saying enough is enough.
Hey, answer me a question, Rose and James. Did the imprisonment of the Chicago Teachers Union president, was that rigged? Was that a setup? I'm not sure. What happened there?
I don't know, but in general, you do have to approach the government to say we're about to conduct civil disobedience, and these are the people that are going to be in the front. I mean, I know from my past experience that we did have to negotiate some degree of, I don't know how to describe it, Geneva Conference agreements. So
For protests or something. Yeah.
Right, for protests. So you arrest certain people, but not the others. So she definitely probably said, "You take me before you take anybody else."
Hmm.
Right?
That's
a whole other show. That's a whole other show because I got so much I want to say, Rose. I got so much I want to say about that. Oh, and I think you know me a little bit better than most of the listeners. You know, I have to control myself here on this one.
You're chomping it to bit. You're chomping it to bit. I can hear it.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Gary, go ahead and get that last point that you wanted to get in.
It's the last on the physical stress, and then I'll fly through the rest because our time is quickly evolving, racing here, moving on. But we're having fun. This research won a Nobel Prize. in 2009 for medicine and physiology. This woman years ago discovered the tip of the DNA chromosome that wear off, they erode when the person is under prolonged stress such that the DNA chromosome can't replicate. So if you want to stay young, the fountain of youth is keep your DNA chromosomes intact, and that cap is called a telomere. And she discovered those. Well, what she did is she did several studies with women, and she actually could quantify how much your life is shortened by stress. And she's got it down now. She'll measure your telomeres if you want to know. But if that doesn't shake you to the core, stress is not some imaginary concept. It's down to the DNA chromosome, for crying out loud. Okay. Now, everybody understands anxiety, debilitating anxiety and panic attacks. Bully targets experience that in the 80-90% range, 50% on panic attacks, 80-90% on anxiety. Clinical depression, 30% develop depression, and hence the medication that Rose is talking about. And there's anti-anxiety, too, but the meds kick in with antidepressants. That's when the GPs just send them out like sugar pills. But the point is they don't really know how to treat the depression. They're just, what we're doing is we're dealing with the symptoms and never getting at the root cause. And the root cause is the toxic psychosocial work environment that has been allowed to operate on these targets. And then on the emotional side, but not totally separate from brain, of course. Depression is the biology of the brain. It's the change in the neurotransmitter serotonin. And if we could bottle that crap and swig it, then we could probably, I wish we could overcome depression in an easier way like that. But we can't. We don't. So long story short, people who are traumatized are the people who experience post-traumatic stress symptoms. They don't all have to get PTSD, but listen to the symptoms. A hypervigilance where you're always looking over your shoulder, acting like something's going to happen bad today. I don't know what, but I'm waiting on the next shoe to drop. That total apprehension, panicky apprehension, that's hypervigilance. Avoidance. I got to avoid these people. If I see them in town in the grocery store, I'm going to change the aisle. And if I can't escape them, I'll leave the damn store. I'll drop the bags and go. I can't drive by the parking lot of the school where I was bullied, that building anymore. I can't do it. I can't go to the superintendent's office. It brings back all the emotions, and I'm ready to throw up again. So you got that. Then you got a lot of the anger and irritability angle of PTSD. So you have that, which makes traumatized people very hard to help. You want to help, but they push you away horrifically, and it's terrible. So then you go on, if the PTSD doesn't subside or the depression doesn't subside and they don't see a way out, they fall into, and you mentioned it, James, it's despair. They don't see a viable alternative. They are like a trapped spouse who, when other people on the outside say, oh, there are so many other people who would love you, don't you listen to that lie, doesn't matter. When you're in that mode, when you are in their head, when you're living that life, you don't want to be told happy thoughts about there's so many alternatives. If you can't perceive them, they don't exist. And that's what drives people to suicide. Now, we've got suicides galore in bullying stories, but they don't get, by the press, they don't get told as bullying stories because people say, oh, you know how the press covers post-suicide. Oh, he was a troubled soul. He was messed up. Yes. But now I take you back to your part. It's not just the individual who's harmed. Research shows that the coworkers experience as high level anxiety as the target, actually, probably by living the lie. They have both the shame of a target and the personal shame, but they also have guilt. Just like you said, Rose, when you come to work and you're living a lie with these violation of these four principles, they're living a lie knowing they didn't go and help their coworker. Now, why is it that coworkers push people away? Well, it goes back to the old bystander effect, and it's the F word. Are you ready? How far can I go on this, James? Can I say the F word on your show?
As far as you want to go.
I'm only going to go fear. F the F word.
Oh, man. That's a four-letter word that you were... Oh, now see, now I'm mad. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, there you are. Well, it's fucking fear, but the point is...
I like that better.
Fear. I know you do. Fear of being next. Fear that if I stand up, I'll botch it. Fear if I stand up and help help Rose, I'll be the only one, and therefore we'll both go down. Uh-huh. Fear that, you know, all kinds of fear. Jerry Harvey always talked about it. We think up worst-case scenarios to rationalize not helping people. They're making a movie. It's so interesting you're in New York State. They're making a little independent movie of the Queens Kew Garden murder of Kitty Genovese way back in 1964, yeah, which launched the whole bystander effect research. And that poor woman, of the 38 witnesses, of whom none called until later. So the movie's going to be called 37 because the one person did call, but they didn't do it before she was dead. And so why is it that in death circumstances, when people are entirely safe, they don't intervene? So in the workplace, nobody intervenes. So that loss, now that takes me to the social support pain, another source of pain that the MRI is able to measure. We don't have time to go into it, but believe me, when this one researcher named Kip Williams out of Purdue has invented a way to create ostracism in about 3-4 minutes. Interesting, huh? Ostracism is when the whole group shuns and socially excludes the one worker. And if people will say, so what? That's not such a big deal. Are you kidding? A fundamental human need is the need to be included in a group, need for inclusion. It's like almost like depriving us of water or oxygen because we're social animals. So shunning and social exclusion is extremely socially painful, but the MRI, when they do it in the MRI situation, they can simulate the ostracism. It's physically painful, as in take 2 ibuprofen painful. No kidding.
Yeah.
It triggers
Gary,
pain.
Let me break in.
Go ahead.
Being placed in the rubber room, isolation, being singled out, being pushed out of your classroom in front of your students and teachers, putting you in isolation, it's so diminished a person, depending on a person's personality, I use that as a generic term, that it becomes that isolation that they put prisoners in isolation. They put prisoners of war in isolation. There's a reason
a
for
technique.
All of this.
It's a torture technique.
Absolutely. Now, we have another caller. Everyone, I've just been told that I can go beyond 3 o'clock on our West Coast time, 6 o'clock here. So we can continue this conversation for a while. So let's bring in this other caller. And I don't know who this caller is. So, caller, are you there?
Yes, James, it's Kathy Cole. How you doing? I'm here with Dave Duker.
Yes,
and
this is
Tom.
Kathy Cole, everyone. Let me just introduce Kathy again. Kathy is hosting me here this second time around. She hosted me when I was out here in December, the first week in December, and we got together and decided that there was so much work that needs to be done to inform the public what is really happening with bullying in the public education system, that's the reason I came back, and I will be here probably at least 4 weeks, taking me into March and possibly further, but definitely coming back maybe sometime later in the spring to continue our work. And she and I came up together to Albany today for something that's going to, I'll tell you about that a little later on. But Kathy, thank you for calling. And what do you have to say?
I have to say, can you hear me? Oh, yeah, you can hear me. So I'm looking forward to being here. I think going to be telling not only my story, but all of the...
Kathy, we're having... You're fading in and out, Kathy. I don't know where you're located, but you're fading in and out.
James, can you hear me better now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to meeting Gary. Can you hear? Is it okay?
Yes, you're okay.
Okay.
You're
so I'm looking forward to meeting Gary. And I'm looking forward to telling not only my story, but the story of all the other people that have reached out to me who've experienced retaliation and abuse and discrimination at the hands of the New York State and New York City Department of Education. And it's something that really needs immediate attention. And we're getting a lot of exposure by Sue Edelman from the New York Post. She's helping us expose this massive systemic troubling issue. And the public needs to be made aware, because if we can't advocate for the children, their health and safety and their well-being, and, you know, not following federally funded laws for IEPs and mandated funded safety laws, if we cannot advocate for them, then who will? We need to be protected.
Right. And if you are not safe, if you do not have a sense of security, there's no hope in hell that the kids are going to be able to enjoy the protection, because they're going to pick up on all the anxieties and everything else. And all of the people who are so whoop-de-doo about school bullying and student bullying, they need to be reminded that if you don't attack the adult bullying, if you don't keep the teachers safe, there's no way in hell the teachers are going to have the moral authority to then deal with the student bullying. So let's get first.
Well, it's funny that you say that. The moral authority, because one of the, I wrote a short piece to read in case that my nerves get the best of me, and basically I'm asking them and compelling the legislature that it's their moral obligation to protect us so that we can fulfill our moral obligation to protect the children.
Well, I agree. I agree. I think we need to reverse the 30 years of teacher tromping, and I mean, that's what the whole war report's about, James, right? The fact
yes.
that they've turned naive society, people with no kids or people whose kids have long been out of school, to go ahead and feel okay about bashing teachers. And it's like, how could you possibly have done that? But they have. And it needs to be attacked at its very root. It's got all of it. Go ahead.
Jerry, it goes back. At least I take it back to the 50s when Sputnik was the Russian launched Sputnik. That from that point on, when people were saying, how in the hell did the Russian beat us to space? Oh, they did it because they have a superior education system. Our schools suck. And it was that time, I've even said this on the show when I was going through the history, that teachers lost the white hat. And all of a sudden, teachers, we're villains. And it was just magnified in the 1980s when Ronald Reagan brought a commission together to say how bad public education really, really was, that issued something called a nation at risk.
Nation at risk, yeah.
And
yeah,
people, teachers were further, you know, we're the fault. We at fault.
Well,
bad teachers.
Well, I've seen it. I mean, just from my observation, I've really seen it since the whole collapse of the economy in 2008, especially on Long Island and New York City. You know, the people that were in charge of protecting us and our tax dollars and our money had to defer the guilt onto someone. So all of a sudden it was like, oh, well, it's all these teachers with these big pensions and this health benefit
right.
and all that.
Right.
You know, and I think they really... That highlighted the target of blaming someone for this mess that we're in.
You cannot either take the Bloomberg approach and the corporatization and put these business clowns. Wasn't Klein the New York one of the New York superintendents?
Yes.
And then one after another who said they had no experience, and they said, I'm going to take a little while. One of them was a woman, I remember saying, it's going to take me a little while to get up to speed on the issues. Well, you shouldn't be running the largest thinking school district in the United States. Unbelievable. They thought that. Here's the thing. Now, have you been to a dentist this past year? Yeah, you probably have. Does that mean you should be able to go work on other people's teeth? No. We say you got to go to school. You got to get licensed. But with education, they say, well, I've been to school, so therefore I know everything about it. No, you were a consumer. You don't know the trick. You don't know how hard it is. You don't know about human development. You don't know learning strategy. You don't know. They have deprofessionalized it. They make it sound like it's a teacher in a box, and they're interchanging.
And I think we're also, me as a parent, and seeing what's being done is that when you're talking about, this Bloomberg administration for the principals, and I am not a teacher, but I was a vendor for the New York State and New York City Department of Education for 30 years. And there's a law that protects the kids and the staff, and it's from being enforced. So I'm, but the with these abusive principals, you can't make it corporate when it's one thing. Adults, we can take it, okay? But what they're doing is they're instilling the fear in the teachers that are the reporters and the advocates for the children. Again, I don't mean to sound like a broken record, but if we don't have, not only do we need a law, we also need legislation, I believe, to have the law, have these administrators who continually berate and threaten teachers are held accountable. There is no accountability.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
That's exactly the situation.
It's more about actually executing and implementing the existing statutes that you already have, because we do have due process, and we do have the right to grieve, and that's where our union needs to step up and make sure that everyone's using the protocol.
Are you from New York City? Yeah.
No, she's from Connecticut.
Are you a teacher in New York City?
No, but I'm a teacher here, and I taught in New York for 3 years. And so I have a situation that's unique to Connecticut in which that there's a promotion of that whole business model efficiency for public education, and then a throwback to slavery times. We actually incorporated a special master to fix our district.
Like the emergency manager in Flint. All you
exactly.
have to say now,
exactly.
today,
but in New York City, you really don't have due process, because you can, with an accusation, be thrown in the rubber room. And you won't find out what that accusation is for 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years. You don't have due process. You are done.
Yeah, that could be the bottlenecking. That could be the bottlenecking of that bureaucracy. We have a great person out there running for UFT, Francisco Portelos, is he?
Yes, I'm very good with Francisco.
He recorded his experiences in the rubber room, and he shows us his assignments, and it's just an act of desperation from middle management of New York teachers' department, the education department, rather.
I started advocating for the rubber room teachers, and they're reaching out to me.
Hold it, folks. Kathy and Rose, you're talking over each other.
Yes.
And that's a no-no.
I know, we have a time delay.
Okay.
Did you hear?
No.
We have a time delay.
We do have a time delay.
So, Rose, I just wanted to let you know that Francesco is what got me into advocating, really, for the teachers, and especially the rubber room teachers. And I have become friends, dear friends, with many of them. Mm-hmm. And I have anywhere between 2 to 6 of them a week reaching out to me about fearing for their jobs, and they don't even know what they did. They're a target of an abusive principal over and over again. I mean, I have one principal that I'm going to read a letter tomorrow. 90 teachers have been driven out of a school because of this man in 4 years.
Right, and that's where you take it to the superintendent.
Let's go back to...
And the superintendent told the retired principal who reached out to try and help to mind your business and stay in retirement.
Okay. Folks, let's stick with our topic. We're getting off of that. And so we're talking about stress. We're talking about the social psychological, physical, emotional, political, economic impact on the victims of bullying in the workplace, and this workplace being education. Now, we also have another caller just come on. I think, was it Gina? Are you there?
Tina. Yes. Hello.
Tina. Oh, hi, Tina. Where are you calling from?
I am calling from Rhode Island.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Well, I'm calling because I just want to say that in talking with my other friends, my colleagues, there is a large number of teachers right now who are on antidepressants, who are getting psychological counseling outside of school, people who are constantly anxious, very nervous. When we have people come through and observe, it seems like it's always like we're being dangled over the fire. It's not a question of being recognized for the work that you do, but it's being given an unbelievable huge list of teeny tiny things that have to be included with everything that goes with planning, evaluating, and running a classroom. It's an unbelievable task. And like I myself have been having frequent nightmares. I've had more headaches. I love teaching, but the fact is it's so hard to feel free and creative anymore because you're constantly feeling like there is some sort of a deadline, like it's a hurry up and learn model. And I feel like we're teaching curriculum without looking at the whole needs of children. And the fact is if we get to know children for who they are and recognize what they can do, it's from there that we can set reasonable goals and help children succeed. But we're not really given that opportunity to do that anymore. And it's very frightening. It makes me wonder every year how I can survive. And I have about another 20 years I have to go before I can retire.
Wow. You won't live if you don't get things. I'm so
you're hitting on
people say that. Yeah.
You're hitting on
I'm
all
sorry?
The things that we've been talking about. Tina, you're hitting on all the things that we've talked about. Teachers having to do things to their students that they don't agree with. There's a cognitive
I mean, one of the things is,
taking place.
Like, I have a young son at home, and I would feel horrified if he had a teacher like me. I don't feel like I am a valuable or important person anymore. And I am glad that he is learning in another district than where I teach.
Well, you're injured. You're reacting. It's an injury reaction to the fact you spoke of the children's needs, but the administrators have no intention or ability to assess your needs, the needs of the provider, the needs of the teachers. They've totally skipped that step in this draconian model. That's the thing that pisses me off, James, about when you're talking about the war. The war is to actually brutalize the teachers under the guise of, quote, education reform. No, they have to be a key ingredient in that makeup, and they need to be consulted as full-blown partners, not treated like shit and run over like this. So when this time wasn't talking about wanting to take care of the needs of the students, that administrators need to hear she has needs, damn it. Anyway, that's my two bits.
Well, I think that also, I almost feel like being set up to fail, where we're constantly being told, you know, well, we're just going to have to get by with this less, and then this less. You never get things back that have been cut, but you're told that how well you can cope and how wonderful it is that you can cope as it is, you know. But when you have students in your room who are homeless, and you have more than half of a class that is learning to speak English, but you're not given materials or the opportunity to assess in a first language, and yet you're scolded for not differentiating enough. You know, I can only work with what I have, and I do the best that I can, but I also realize my conscience says that the children deserve so much more.
And that is
Hello?
Stress. That's stress, folks. that
austerity.
Stress.
It's the stress of austerity. There have been so many articles on suicide in, well, not only middle-class America, white America, as a matter of fact, but the European countries that have been under all these national austerity plans for years, Spain and Greece. And so it causes tremendous societal pain and all the rest. And what I'm hearing is, because this is not where I live and dwell 24/7, on bullying, yes, but the particulars of the intricacies of bullying an entire profession and ruining the profession of teaching and taking the most idealistically minded, wonderful people and miring them in the mud to the point where they all want to quit, leave, or die. This is horrible. I understand that. Yeah. But the point is, it's austerity as the treatment. In other words, the starting point is there's never enough. We're never going to give you adequate supplies. We're not China. We're not committed to education. Go ahead.
We have another caller. Boy, you know, people are lining up to get into this conversation. caller, are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Tell us who you are. Yes.
My name is Aixa Rodriguez, a teacher in New York City. I'd like to offer this one comment on observation. The teachers are there to teach all types of subjects but are not being given classes. There's plenty of music teachers who are now ATRs, no music programs. There are five schools in one building, all these extra principals, and you just cut all the different courses. You have 1,200-something teachers as the ATR, with subjects ranging from
ATR?
All subjects.
What's ATR?
ATR in New York City. ATR in New York City is absent teacher reserve, essentially older teachers that got pushed out. But they're still young. Many of them are just 40 and up. So this is all on purpose, in terms of giving us whatever. The money is there. This is all being done on purpose. This is to make sure that...
I don't understand. I feel like there are so many districts that have more administrators, people administrating other administrators, that we have fewer people actually interacting directly with children and servicing children.
Or you have purposeful cuts so that you purposely create chaos so schools can close. And like what happened in my school not so long ago during Regents Week, our charter school came to visit and take pictures of the classroom as the kids were testing because they were interested in the space. So it's all a game. It's a real estate game. They have to create this desire to change, this reason for change, so they starve us into failure, label us, pass a law, take over our school, take over the real estate, get the law to pass that the tax money goes to the charter school. The charter school uses that tax money to purchase an already taxpayer-owned building. The taxpayer is paying twice for the same building, and a charter has come in as a parasite and taken over the real estate that was a public school.
I agree,
in my situation, going to the poor neighborhoods where I work in the South Bronx and systematically doing it step by step, including an incredible campaign to put in the minds of people that charters are better than public. And they deny resources so that the chaos can be there to give them the reason, the justification to take over our school. And they bully
how does that how does that produce any stress?
It produces, exactly.
Assessments are published for the media to see. And it's a misuse of information. So instead of testing students to find out what they know and how to use that to guide instruction, Instead, it's about evaluating teachers, evaluating schools. It devalues
or even the punitive evaluation
the real estate value of neighborhoods and cities. It is absolutely true. I mean, nobody wants to move to an area when they look at the test scores in the newspaper, but that's not why they're supposedly given. But that's how they're being used. It's being misused.
But when it's a self-fulfilling prophecy,
first,
too.
And bully the teachers first because supposedly the test scores are low, and they create that environment where the teachers constantly leave because of this bullying, of course the schools are going to have problems. If the teachers only
stay absolutely, a high turnover rate.
So
if a teacher doesn't have their needs met, they will leave.
Yeah.
You know, they have to take care of their own families and their mental health. That's absolutely true.
Ladies,
and they do.
Teachers, do you see what you are talking about as a form of bullying?
Yes.
Yes,
you know, I'll give you a perfect example in the Bronx. There are in New York City, there are 133 principals on the administrators in need of improvement list, the annoy list, and all of them have a long track record of intimidating people, threatening people, harassing people, and doing multiple observations on teachers in the same week. Just to get them to leave, or to justify getting rid of them, to deny them tenure, or to force them into the rubber room. And the rubber room still exists.
It's amazing. It's amazing how people in the helping profession are treated.
It has
very
no
little
value.
Respect for
getting
paid
for
my training.
Because it's all
about the buck.
It's all about making money. I have a two-word phrase I think your teacher should be using, and it's sort of the title of a white paper you could write or some sort of report over all of this bullshit, is collateral damage, because that's how they're treating you. Under the guy using James's war metaphor, and you are under attack, they blow you up. And though it is deliberate, they don't care. They don't care. I think it's part of the game. You're so expendable. They think you're stinking expendable, but you're not replaceable. That's what they're not getting. Who in the hell do they think is going to be doing this in the future? They just don't think ahead enough. They just want to destroy you now. And I don't get
well, and I also
why.
Think that the impact on the children.
I beg to differ.
I mean, if you look at the number of children and their discipline issues, I mean, when children misbehave, it's because they're trying to tell you something. And I think that with the unreasonable demands, the stressful classrooms, the unhappy educational settings, you get a tremendous amount of stress. Children are really having a hard time functioning in the classroom, and if they're not given material that is appropriate for their age level and recognized for their developmental needs to get up, move around, have hands-on experiences, all of those things at a young age, they don't learn how to learn, and so it really does come out much stronger and worse in middle school and high school. We have a generation of children who are learning to hate school.
We have a new caller, so and I also want to say
I'm
this.
I'm going to say goodbye, but thank you for letting me speak.
I've had more callers tonight than any time else on this show, and we've been on the air almost 2 years.
I appreciate that.
Thank
well,
you,
very nice
everyone.
Talking
Don't
to
leave.
You. Thank you for your time. Bye-bye.
Okay, you know.
Thank you, Rhode
many
Island.
Many of you who, many, it's Long Island. I thought it was Long Island. But anyway, let's bring this other caller in, and everyone stay on the line. The more the merrier. Right. Are you there, caller?
Yes, I'm here.
Christian, are you there?
Yeah, that's me. I'm going to say hi.
Hi, Christian.
Hi.
And where are you calling from?
Connecticut.
Oh. This is an East Coast marathon. What do you have to say?
Well, us East Coasters are riled up.
Yes.
And you're not going to take it anymore? You're mad as hell and you're not going to take it anymore?
Well, you know, I've been doing this for 10 years now, and I've done kindergarten through 12th grade, and I've seen it all, and I think it's just, I don't know, it's stress in the kids, stress in the teachers. It's just a very stressed out setting to be involved in, and it's heartbreaking all across the board.
And it's preventable. It's totally preventable, so it's clearly being done by design. I think that's James's point and the caller's point, and I'm thoroughly convinced it is. And they don't give a damn about the needs, the human needs, the security needs, the safety needs of the teachers, period.
Absolutely.
I think it's very clear that there's no respect for the needs of children, nor the humanness of the job that the teachers see. Just this year, probably like 2 weeks ago, one of my team teachers had a nervous breakdown, and she has yet to come back.
This is happening in so many places. Just like Kathy said, people calling her, telling her, you know, their story. I get the same thing here in terms of people who will either message me, email me, they'll tell me their story, or they'll call me and they'll tell me about someone else that's dear to them, a colleague, and et cetera. It is a phenomena, and it's one of the reasons, of course, that we're doing this series on workplace bullying, is to bring this out into the light for those who don't know what's happening, that this is a real phenomena. Yes?
I almost hate to talk about my own story because I feel like, you know, in some respects that I'm taking away from what all of this has been doing to the children that I work with, but I ultimately changed schools in the district that I was working in because, you know, I would consider myself a survivor of domestic violence. I felt as though I was being victimized by my principal. Like, it was almost the exact same pattern that a victim would have gone through. Like, it just completely blew my mind how I felt and how similar that felt.
How similar it is. It's similar because it's another form of abuse, and it's the only one that hasn't been addressed by any law. It's amazing.
I mean, I can't even, and it was something as simple as, you know, thinking that there was this kind of mutual respect that we could discuss things that were going on in our school, and how quickly that turned into when a teacher speaks out about something that they feel is not being done correctly for their children, that they then come after you.
Yes.
James, I have something to say that one of the ladies really made an important point about, and that is their own unselfishness can be their own undoing. She said, I don't want to take away from the needs of the kids, but listen to me. You have to take care of yourself. What's the line in the airplane when they say the oxygen masks are coming down, and put yours on first, then the children's. You can't help the child if you're going to lose your air. So you must take care of your needs, too, first. It sounds selfish to make your personal health a priority, but what is insidious and sneaky about the health impact that we've been talking about today is most of it goes on without awareness. You don't see that it's what that person has done to you. That's why you're having the colitis. You don't see that's why you have the high blood pressure and all of the rest. But the connections are there to be made, and then to make the statement or take the steps to take care of your own health first so you can then serve the kids. But you'll never, like you all say, until you are in a workplace free from abuse, you can never be the optimal teacher that you once were. These people are structurally taking a work environment and creating it that is so horrific that anybody thrown into that torturous circumstance will act impaired. But in reality, they're not impaired. They're injured. They're getting taken down
This is the body's response to distress. And we just, it's as natural as can be, but to me what's inexcusable is that that's part of your job. What the hell? The public needs to know. Do you archive these shows, James?
Yes. Yes.
Very good. I will grab them and also put them on mine and send them to my audience too. These people need, I'm going to say, listen to these teachers. Listen. The public probably has no stinking idea. They think Bill Gates is the great reformer, you know. Mm-hmm. And however the Republicans talk about Common Core and the rest, they've totally botched it. They wouldn't know what we're talking about today, but this is the real war. This is the real attack. These are the real victims. So let's get it straight.
If I may add, that this is part and parcel
Gary?
Of that plan too. This is
Gary.
This is Rose.
I'm going to say something to Gary. Gary, you remember the first half hour of the show? You used the term "aho."
Yeah.
Okay. Then you just mentioned Bill Gates.
Uh huh.
Okay.
I use the term asshole.
There you go.
I connect those two, Bill Gates and asshole. He is an asshole. We have another caller that's coming on. So, hey, let's, you know, we'll stay here for a few more minutes. We have another caller. Are you there, caller?
Yeah, this is Nicole from Detroit. Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Right, Detroit.
Hi, Nicole.
Oh, right, Detroit.
Hi.
After a couple months
of student teacher sit-outs and student walkouts, we did get the emergency manager to resign. It's a great victory for the movement here in Detroit. Yeah,
Woo-hoo!
And I just
wondered he's a Flint water guy.
Yes,
he's the same guy. That's right. Stopping now, though, because we know the real problem is the whole emergency manager policy. I mean, it's the ultimate bully,
yes.
You know, coming from the governor, Rick Snyder. And just by chance, at the same time, a personal case, I won a personal victory in court against some principal harassment I faced last school year for speaking up for students' needs. And so I just wanted to offer some hope. I heard someone earlier say, we do have a grievance procedure, and we can use that. I know at least the union in Detroit has not been filing, you know, grievances for a long time, but we elected a president last year who would, and unfortunately they removed him by doing a witch hunt. But before they did, we filed a ton of grievances, and one of them was mine, in which, you know, the principal, the only time she ever observed me in the classroom and then told me to meet her in the office to chastise me of something that I was quoted saying in the union newspaper. You know, protected speech in my union newspaper that our students didn't have textbooks, and this was in January, you know, and another teacher had told me she just received her textbooks. And for that, you know, I was harassed by this principal and filed a grievance immediately, took it, you know, to the step two level and filed a complaint in court, our Michigan Employee Relations Court, and won a settlement recently, which seems like not that big of a deal. It's a pretty standard posting that's to be put in my school and also four other teachers in four other schools who filed complaints against their bully principals that states, you know, what teachers' rights are to participate in union activities in or outside of the school without fear of repercussions or retaliations, and contact your union rep or your line. It's pretty standard, you know, things that should be posted in every school anyway, but the sense of relief I have in having that, you know, feeling like we can actually fight back against these bullies and win if we're determined to stick it out, you know, and go through the process and be part of a movement, you know, doing it collectively as I did with a group of teachers here in Detroit. So
what do we say to these teachers that are super stressed out? They're scared to follow through with the process because they need to have a paycheck come in and not be completely, like, tossed off the face of the earth from their administrators that, I mean, it's rank and file all the way up with them. I mean, how do you garner that courage?
they really can't clearly that and I have to get off the phone. But to me, it's being part of a movement, not doing it alone.
Yes.
You know, being part of a movement,
right.
Being very
you
public
be
about
alone.
It.
Thank you,
we
Nicole.
We have pickets and rallies in front of the schools where these bully principals are talking to principal, you know, parents and teachers, because of course they weren't just bullying the teachers; they're doing it to the kids and the parents too. And the more, it's just with, mm-hmm. like it is very similar to the domestic abuse or family abuse. Somebody said it earlier, and you've got to go public about it and be, you know, collective mm-hmm. and stand together with other people. I think that's the
Here's
only way to survive it.
Here's what unions could and should do: they should mm-hmm. be the collection place of the. They should be the repository of the expertise about bullying. Mm-hmm. They should have some people
yes.
trained up that know what it is so they can provide the emotional support and validate that union member, that teacher, so that one, he or she doesn't, well, she doesn't think she's crazy. And then they can provide all kinds of additional information, including, you know, you need to follow, and I want you guys that are lobbying in New York to look for the phrase, it's in our bill, our two bills in the Assembly and the Senate, private right of action. Because what Nicole did, she did her internal grievance thing, but grievances will slog down, get mired in the mud, or they'll have union officers who don't even want to acknowledge them. And they certainly won't go to arbitration because everybody's poor. Private right of action, you've got to be able to go to court. But provide that emotional support, and it doesn't have to be a union, but some trained friends in that. Please go to workplacebullyinguniversity.com and read what the hell it is, and you'll see what we have done for... only since 2008, but we're trying to develop enough people who understand enough of this so they can help their peers. That's what it's going to be. It's going to have to come from peer support.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, like, in my case, you know, I had documented what was going on. I was dumping those emails to my private email account, and I went to my union and we sat down and had a meeting, and the union was basically like telling me, just sit there and be quiet, just sit there and be pretty, and we'll just go through the motions. And I felt completely unsupported.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's why that union is an idiotic group, and they need to get rid of that leadership because they're not advocates. You know, this is all going to come tumbling down, and James is going to have a show on the Fredericks case, and it's going to happen in June. So all those dead unions are going to be gone. The smart unions who take care of their members will be able to live, maybe to hold on. But I'm afraid the unions who have been worthless are really going to be challenged right out of existence.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the Fredericks Supreme Court case, yeah.
You're singing my song that I've been singing for 2 years. At all. Well, folks, it is now...
Hello?
Yes. We are coming to an end. This has been, as I said, I've never had as many different callers call in to a single show on a single topic like I had today. This has been incredible for me, and I thank each and every one of you who have called in and who have joined the conversation. I just wish you would do it every week. That would be so cool. But anyway, I thank you. And Gary, you brought the house down. Everyone wanted to come and hear what you had to say about workplace bullying. You're the expert. I thank you profusely. And yes, we can do a part 3 of this sometime. We just have to get together and lay it out. And for my teacher friends and my teacher colleagues, this is what the War Report is all about, giving you a platform to tell others about what is happening. And when I went out on the road, my thing was I wanted to be able to have those victims. Every war has casualties. We are the casualties of this war, and I wanted to get as many of the people who are the casualties an opportunity to tell their stories, from Connecticut to Maine to New York to Maryland, and hopefully in March, beginning of March, I'll be home. If you're still on the line, Nicole, that I'm coming
yes.
home to
mm-hmm.
Detroit, and I'll be there for a long, long time, I hope. so that I can get as many people to talk about what's happening in Flint as well as what's happening there in Detroit. So with that said, folks, I want to say again thanks to everyone, and we have to call this an end. Oh, let me stay on for a couple more minutes with me, people. What I do when I'm on the road, I always try and take the last few minutes and tell people what the week has been like on the road trip. So hang on with me for a couple minutes. As I sat off in the beginning of the show, got here Monday night late, and the very next morning, I'm with Kathy Cole, and we're down in Manhattan. We're attending a Black Lives Matter protest rally at City Hall. Then she and I are going over to other city offices, getting freedom of information material under the Freedom of Information Act. And then we are meeting with people. This is all one day, all across Manhattan and other areas of New York City. I'm not very good on the geography in New York. So that was my first day. Then we have settled into preparing for the trip that we took today from Long Island to where we are now in Albany to meet with some legislators tomorrow. Other teachers have been invited to come to Albany tomorrow to talk about workplace bullying and the need for laws, need for accountability to strengthen the laws, and et cetera. And I had a snowstorm. I haven't been in a snowstorm in I don't know how many years since I left Detroit. And so we had a snowstorm this week. And so next week we have three more snowstorms coming here in the New York area. But also we, Kathy and I, are going to settle down and get to work on the documentary that we are doing about bullying, about corruption, about retaliation against teachers and others here in New York. And we're going to seek in said documentary to do as I try and do here on the War Report. We're going to talk about the what, the who, the where, the when, the how, and more importantly, the who, the web of what I'm calling a web of crony capitalism, the web of corruption that exists, that goes up to the state level, to the district level, to individual school level, and et cetera, in the documentary that we're putting together. So that's what I'm. That's why I'm here. We'll be here the month of February, and then, as I said, going to Detroit hopefully in March, and then coming back here probably late spring, early summer. That's been my week so far on this first week of this journey, and hopefully you guys will come back next week where we'll have another show. Won't be as long as this one, but we'll have another show and another report about the journey. With that, I'm going to say thank you again, and good evening to everyone, and have the rest of this Sunday a good Sunday. Goodbye, everyone.
Yes, go Panthers. Go Panthers.
You know that's what I'm looking at right now, right?
I've got no
Carolina
no
Panthers, folks. That's who I'm rooting for.
Good night.
You know, okay, good night, everyone. Take us out, Doug.
Join us again next time as we explore and become aware of the most pressing problem of our time, education, corporate America, and their unholy alliance.